This is the Finance Committee special meeting, because we changed the time, June 14th, 2022. We'll call the meeting to order, and item two, consider finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees, and the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to government code 54953. I think I need concurrence from Marty. Marty, are you good?
Yeah, I concur.
Okay. Item three, comments from the public. Hands or chats, Amelia?
I don't have any hands raised. We will not be having chats at this meeting. If you'd like to speak, please raise your hand, or you can just speak out and let me know that you have a question or a comment, and I'll take you as soon as John is ready.
Okay. We can move to item four, 2022-23 proposed budget. Are you going to start this off, Paula?
Yeah, absolutely. So we finally finished tabulating this afternoon all of the protest letters, and we're at a total of 1,354 letters in objection to the rate increase. These were all received on or before the deadline of June 1st. As you are aware, the majority of them were form letters, but there were several of them that did ask specific pointed questions. Some of those we actually addressed directly with the residents themselves, and then others we also used to bolster the FAQs that we had posted from last year's protests. So basically, what we did is prepared two separate budgets. So in the event that the Prop 218 protest was not validated and met the requirement of the 1380, we went through and kind of reworked the numbers and did a 10-year spread for the reserve contributions. So instead of doing a 5-year 60% funding across all of the funds, we did a 10-year 50% funding across the water and sewer rates instead. And so that significantly lowered the potential increase for the reserve contributions. And then on the offshoot, if that we did meet that 1380, we did have the carryover budget ready to go, which would have been just current year existing amended budget. And the rates would not have changed with the exception of the drainage and security. So now knowing what we know, we put together the amended revised Prop 218 budget, which has significant cuts to the revenues. So what I'm going to do is I'll walk through this staff report, and then I'll leave that open to any questions. So do you or Marty have any questions before I get started?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm going to take this as we go.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Marty, do you have any questions?
I agree with you.
Okay.
All right. So basically, the proposed revenue budget now is $8.2 million. This is an increase of $98,000 or 1% over 2021 year-end projections. Again, we evaluated all residential and commercial rate usage and reserve contributions. We do have significant funding gaps in capital improvement projects and increasing expenditures. Some of these that were mentioned were the two accounting technician positions. We had a previously unfunded patrol officer position. And we also have, and we've talked about this throughout other committee meetings and board meetings, that there's significant amount of increased costs associated with inflation. One of the ones that really stuck out with me last week was the 30.2% energy costs. And anytime you have energy costs, that increases your goods costs. You know, you things don't get here by osmosis. They get here through trucks. And so when you have significant diesel costs, truckers are going to pass that cost off to their companies. The companies are passing it off to us. So, you know, we're kind of at the mercy of just the supply chain issues and energy costs. So keeping that in mind, we also had an increase in solid waste operations. Part of that is due to their organics operations. They have their own requirements that they have to meet with the state. And so that increases their costs as well. And so unfortunately, how that works with us as a pass-through is they pass it on to us, which we pass on to the residents. And let's see what else. We also have the 21%, actually it's 21% in general liability. And for workers' compensation, I believe it's a 14% increase, which is an overall 17% increase for our risk management costs with GSRMA. And then we also have additional costs with PERS and OPEB and medical insurance costs as well. So the proposed expenditure budget is $8.6 million, which is an increase of about $325,000 or 4% over the previous fiscal year-end projections, which is for our current year here. So administration didn't change. There is 100% of administration operations are allocated to other funds. We have the specific allocations based on the cost allocation plan that was developed in 2018. This allocates all of the direct and indirect costs across the other funds proportionally based on the area of benefit and level of support. Moving into Amelia, can you scroll down, please? Thank you.
Oh, Amelia. Hi, it's John. Go back up, scroll back up to where you were, because I think there's just a typo in there. Is that 2021? Should that be 2122?
Yes. Yes, you are okay. Correct.
Just for tomorrow, just
yeah, I'll get that fixed.
Okay, go ahead down, Amelia, wherever you need to be.
Down to the water, please. So the water, we've worked on this and reduced the original Prop 218 increases. Again, the original Prop 218 notice included the five-year strategy at 60% for reserve contributions. What we are proposing now is a 10-year 50% model, which would smooth out the increases over a 10-year period. The capital improvement and fixed assets hasn't changed. The cost will probably increase over the next couple of years, but we're using this model based on the information that we have today. So this one-year increase in reserve contributions is now lower to $4.33 for water, which would bring the total monthly reserve contribution to $18.33. This is a 4.79% decrease over prior year end projections with the total of $2.7 million in revenues. There is going to be a deficit at the end of the fiscal year. At this point, we do have projections, but if we employ other cost containment strategies and rework the numbers, work with our vendors, we have a shortfall of about $67,000. We're hoping that it doesn't increase due to increased inflation, but we're going to continue to work with the operations staff, see if there's other areas that we can cut some of our operations costs. With water, we really don't want to cut too much because we want to be able to have our staff ensure that our projects and our supplies are within budgetary restrictions, but are also completed timely, and that staff have the tools and resources they need so that they can continue working on those, water leaks that pop up out of nowhere, and just try to make sure that, our residents are continuing to receive the same type of customer service that they have in the past. So water increases are expected to, water expenses are expected to increase about 5%. Again, we are working to decrease some of these numbers so that we can make this budget whole. We typically try not to use unrestricted fund balance to cover any budgetary deficits. However, there is the potential that we would need to request additional funding from the unrestricted fund balance to bring the fund whole at the end of the fiscal year. So moving on to sewer, sewer revenues are projected to increase 8.1% overall. This includes a 4% increase in the sewer base charge and the 21.8% increase for reserve contributions. So again, these are also on the 10-year 50% model. So this was initially proposed at $25 monthly. However, that was reduced to a $3.05 charge on a monthly basis. So that brings it up to, I believe it's $17.05 is for the sewer. And again, the expenditures for sewer are going to increase by 11%. We're also dealing with a lot of employee costs and maintenance and repairs. So that's typically where these expenses are going to see some increases next year. We probably will have to dip into unrestricted fund balance to cover the shortfall. At this time, we're anticipating $146,000 shortfall for the sewer fund. However, again, you know, we are working with staff and vendors, looking at other cost containment strategies and trying to ensure that we're not cutting our staff short. Moving on to drainage, there was no change to drainage. Drainage had the 2% increase, which is the CPI through the Measure K taxes. This will still include the $70,446 subsidy from the administration fund for property taxes. And then solid waste. So solid waste, we worked with Cal Waste. There were a couple of things that they recommended we change so that we could reduce the cost to the residents on the monthly fee. So one of the major things was removing the free bulk waste pickups. Now, right now, there's about 600 residents that take advantage of the free bulk waste pickups. And this has been a free service for, I believe, as long as the contract. And Tom, you may have other information. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But this was a free service that was provided to the residents, and I believe they were allowed 4 per year. This is now going to be a charge. So if residents want to take advantage of a bulk waste pickup, they would need to contact Cal Waste, and they would pay for that directly. However, removing that free service has saved the residents at least a little bit over $3. Per residence per month. So it went from a 30% increase to a 17.9% increase over last year. This also includes the organics waste, which starts January 1st, 2023, which is the $4. Unfortunately, we could not eliminate that. We have to move forward with that. And there will be significant increases in the next couple of years for that organics waste recycling fee charge. So moving on to security, again, security has the 2% CPI. We have property tax allocation that was increased by $140,000 based on expenditures within the operations. We have expenditures are expected to increase 19%, primarily based on the MOU increases, which is a total of 8.5%. We also had funding a position that was previously unfunded for a 5th full-time patrol officer. And we've also adjusted the salaries. I think if you recall, we did that back in October. We created the gate 1 and 2 and patrol 1 and 2 officer that gave succession planning and promotional opportunities to existing staff. That also increased the salary rates as well. So with the summary, we're, and this is more for the board meeting tomorrow. Basically, we're just recommending that the committee review the sample bill below and the changes that we've made to the new the Prop 218 rates and move forward with this at the board meeting tomorrow night. And so with that, I will leave it open to questions.
Marty? Am I muted? Marty, you there?
Amelia, can we look at the sample bills, please? Is that where you were stopping, Paula?
Yes.
I'm back. I just was on mute.
Okay.
I think what caught my eye was the shortfall in sewer. Why do we want to project a shortfall in sewer?
Well, we certainly don't want to project a shortfall in any of the funds. Unfortunately, because we reduced the revenue projections and reduced the base charge, there was an increase to the base charge for sewer. Wanted to make it a little bit more palatable for the residents, and this creates a bit of a shortfall. So $146,000 is manageable. There is the potential that we would need to dip into the unrestricted fund balance to cover that shortfall. But hopefully over the next year, if we can enact some cost containment strategies without compromising the level of service, we will continue to work on that. And hopefully that will reduce some of our expenses.
What's that worth for an average residential metered lot? $146,000, what's that, $4 or something like that? I don't know. What is it?
Let me calculate that for you. Yeah, it's about $425, $430 a month.
Okay.
I do. Question from the audience whenever you're ready, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
Stephanie Bianchi.
Thank you for taking my question. I just have a quick question. So I'm a little bit confused on the statement about adding an additional patrol officer and what that means to CSD's budget. So it's my understanding as it exists now that there's multiple patrol shifts that are going unstaffed. So my question would be, one, what's happening to those funds? And two, on multiple occasions, residents have called for patrol staff assistance and have been told that there's none available. But at the same time, you guys are saying you're funding an additional patrol position. So if our positions as they exist and are budgeted for currently are not being filled, why are we adding additional funds to fund an additional position?
And so let me speak to that position, that particular position first. And then if Tom wants to add as far as the particular staffing, I can add a little bit to that as well. But this particular position had been unfunded. It's been an authorized position. It just was not funded. And at least in the 21-22 fiscal year, I'm not aware, you know, obviously this is my first year here. I'm not aware how long that position had been unfunded, but it has been an authorized position. It would be entirely different to add an additional position and fund it, but this was an authorized unfunded position. And there have been some evaluation done with the staffing. And one of the things that has really hit us hard is COVID. And we have just enough staff to cover the amount of shifts that we need. And when someone's out on COVID, that leaves 10 full days of shifts that are uncovered or that we have to carry over staff to try and augment that missing time. That's when we, you know, contract out with ABA to have those missing shifts covered. But sometimes ABA doesn't have that. And I'm sure Tom can probably add a lot more information to that. But ultimately, the extra, quote, extra position is an authorized position, and we're funding it for next fiscal year, so we have that ability to ensure that people can go on vacations, they can be out sick, we're not going to be missing those extra shifts. Tom, would you like to add more to that?
I'll just add that right now, of our four full-time patrol employees that can go out on patrol, two of them have COVID. So we're really, COVID has really hit the district hard in the past 2 weeks. We currently have three critical staff members out with COVID. We probably have had a person out with COVID almost every, you know, 50% of the time over the past 2 months. So we're doing the best we can. We're trying to, you know, recommend people wear masks whenever feasible and keep their workspace clean. But, you know, everybody knows that everybody's going to get it at some point in time, and we still can't have people work. They get it. All staff get up to 10 days of COVID sick leave, and that helps get through that. But we have a requirement. We can't, if you have COVID, you got to be gone for 5 days if you don't show any symptoms and 10 days if you do.
Tom, is that the reason why we didn't have patrol last Friday, was because of COVID? And is there a reason why Kelly didn't fill in for that unfilled shift when there was an accident at the plaza?
Yes, I will answer that for Tom. Kelly is one of those out with COVID. And so we have two officers out with COVID. So that is why that shift was not filled.
And then if we don't have, if ABA doesn't have anybody available and our other two officers are working those shifts, I mean, we can't have people work 12-hour shifts all the time. So the staffing is really a problem right now, and it's almost direct, it is directly related to COVID.
So that shift wasn't filled last Friday because Kelly was out with COVID leave?
I believe so. If not Kelly, the other one, and Kelly had already worked. I think Kelly worked all day, or I don't know. I don't have the schedule in front of me, Crystal.
Yeah.
And I know we've submitted a records request act that includes all of the shifts that Kelly is covering. So we have some work to do. We'll get back to you. And
okay. I'm just specifically asking about last Friday, though. I understand it was that oftentimes the people in the office don't work 5-day work weeks. And so what I'm trying to confirm is whether he was out with COVID or whether it was a day off. And so as a result, we didn't have the support for the fire department.
Yeah, I'll get your answer.
Okay. Publicly would be great.
What time is the accident?
11:16 a.m. And fire called for support and they were told that there was no one on patrol to assist.
Okay.
Did they call the SAC sheriff? What'd they say?
The SAC sheriff is typically 45 minutes to an hour and a half out. That's why we typically have.
I understand that. I've been here longer than you have. I understand that. I'm just making the point. The other point, as it relates to the budget, understand that from an expense standpoint, an uncovered shift doesn't change anything. Okay. With the COVID leave that's allowed by the state, we pay that bill whether we have somebody or multiple people on COVID. There is a national shortage of security staff, which you can read about any number of places. So we attempt to go get coverage, and it's not always possible. And quite honestly, we don't know when this is going to end. When COVID's over, it'll end.
Well, respectfully, the unfilled shifts aren't all due to COVID.
Yeah, and I suppose if you, well, we'll get back to you. We'll get back to you.
Oh yeah, and not now. I'm asking Kelly if he's able to answer me, but we also have one of our patrol officers on a month long leave for a family issue. So technically, we only have five people. I think we just trained a new ABA guy, and I think he's probably by now ready to act on his own. But I think right now we only have two healthy patrol officers because one's out of the country and two are down with COVID. So we're struggling, and COVID really is a problem. So that's my public answer. If I hear more from Kelly, I'll let you know. But I just remembered we have one officer out of the country on a family issue for a month and a few days.
Any other questions, Amelia?
I do have another hand raised, Laura G. Thank you for raising your hand.
Hi there, I appreciate all the explanation about the security patrol. I'm curious, it sounds like there's been a lot of work on your side to rework some of the numbers. Am I reading this correctly, that the proposed rate hike might be lower than what you had originally anticipated? And possibly it might also be due to the salary savings between Rick leaving and the authorized and funded security sergeant that's vacant.
So I can answer that. Let me try to answer your first question. Yes, the rates are lower than what we had originally proposed. Primarily, this is due to extending the 5-year 60% reserve contributions out to a 10-year 50%. And so that's where you're going to see the majority of it. We also did the solid waste workaround with Cal Waste. So that did reduce the rates. It went from a 30% increase to a 17.9% increase. Some of the other smaller changes that we made were to the base contributions for both water and sewer, and a slight adjustment to the water usage. So the water usage is only a 4% increase as well. So it's 4% for residential base for both water and sewer, and then 4.2% for the water usage rate. The salary savings that we achieve will be at the end of this fiscal year. We do intend to fill those positions for the security staff. So it just depends on what point in time within the next fiscal year that we do fill those positions, we would see any of those salary savings. So ultimately, at the end of this fiscal year, we do have some salary savings for the security, but only for the sergeant position and then other gate officer vacancies that we've had throughout the year. Did that answer your question?
It did for the most part. I just know with the vacancies that we have for this year, it seems like it would be a significant chunk out of what the shortfall might have been. And I was really just trying to confirm that. So, and do you have what the rate increase, the final that you're going to put forward tomorrow, what that number might be?
That would be these numbers here today that we're presenting to the Finance Committee.
Okay, thank you.
I have another question, Stephanie Bianchi.
Thank you.
Okay, Amelia, am I muted? Just, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, no problem. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Thank you. So I appreciate the fact that the board and the finance committee and staff is looking at ways to make cuts to lower the rate increase. However, I have a couple of concerns. If CSC board and staff paid attention to the protest letter, specifically some of the items of concerns from community members that we spoke to was the exorbitant staff raises, which I don't hear that's being addressed by the Finance Committee and some of the changes in the cuts as well. So I feel there needs to be a give and take. While I hear services are being cut for the residents, as far as, for example, the bulk waste pickups, what is happening on staff or the board side to compromise here? Another concern was the increase in premiums for some of the litigation costs that are coming up. So I think the community's concerns are multifactorial, and we would appreciate if those would be addressed. The other thing too that I want to point out, that while I appreciate the board considering that originally the terms for increase was over 5 years, spreading the increase out over 10 years is fantastic, but still the facts remain that the areas of concern for these percentage increase still exist. You're just changing the terms of the loan, so to speak.
Well, I think one of the things you might consider going forward is I don't know that we're changing the terms of the loan. We're stretching it out to meet the concerns of the residents for the immediate future. I mean, you know, we forecast, if you look at operating expenses, I mean, one of the problems that we have that is consistent with our water right and the ability to service the community with water at all is that we dump, you know, millions and millions of gallons of.
Sure.
And excuse me, please. You can have as long as you want, but you're going to listen to me finish my answer first. Is that okay? I guess it is. You know, we're processing recycled water here to a nearly drinkable condition and delivering it to a private golf course, because that's the way the community was created. And that's what the Regional Water Board wants us to do. So $4 of that is coming directly out of the operating expense, and a stretch out, okay, of the reserve is not lessening the problem. I mean, essentially what we're doing is forecasting as best we can now based on what we know, okay, what those reserves are going to have to be. They're still underfunded. There's still $55 million worth of assets out there that has to be reserved for. And we're not, what we're doing is we're saying we're hoping we can get by on 60% in 10 years versus 50% in 5 years. So go ahead. If you have additional comments or questions, now it's your turn.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me my turn. I appreciate that. So I agree. I think you and I agree we are on the same page. The community and those that we spoke to and those that were represented by the protest are not protesting any of the rate increases for water, for infrastructure, or as needed for reserves. What my question specifically was focused on was the salaries and the salary increases and those that are not comparable with other positions. And I know this is where we're going to disagree, but while the residents are taking cuts in services, whether it's patrol, whether it's security, or whether it's our bulk waste pickup, I'm not seeing that there's any compromise from the board and or staff to take equivalent cuts on their end. And I know that this has been an area of discourse, but I tell you, if we're all coming to the table and making a compromise, there needs to be compromise on both sides.
The board's responsibility is to determine what it takes to run the business. And this is what it takes to run the business. I mean, you've got six key positions running an $8.5 million company. I don't know if you've ever run an $8.5 million company. I used to own one. And you know, you get what you pay for. Okay, so no, we're not going to compromise on salaries. Of course, I'm speaking for myself. I can't speak for the rest of the board. You could address that comment tomorrow night, but personally, I'm not recommending that we make that compromising cut that you're asking for. Marty, do you have any comments?
No, I don't think we were intending to reduce salaries. We have contracts with these people, and I don't think we can in every situation.
Anything out there, Amelia?
No more hands raised.
Okay. Paula, do we need to go anywhere from here with the charts or with what you put in here?
No, this was basically it. The major presentation that goes into more detail will be provided at tomorrow's board meeting. Ultimately, this was just the discussion with the Finance Committee to review and approve the revised Prop 218 water and sewer and solid waste rates to move forward to tomorrow night's board meeting.
And just, I want to understand, because this is based now on a final count that we've done, you know, board authority rests with the fact that it met a criteria or it didn't. Based on your count, I'm seeing that it didn't. What is there detail we propose to present tomorrow night that shows what this number is and how we got that number?
Yes, I'm going to defer to Tom on that, on what the plans are for what we plan to present.
On the notices. Yeah, that's what I'm particularly, yeah, I just want to know, based on the notices, final counts, and reporting on the same.
Yeah, we were here late last night trying to finish up all that we could, and then people got tired and came in early today. And we finished this about 2 o'clock today. So we have a spreadsheet that I'm going to ask Amelia to post in the FAQs on our webpage for the Prop 218. And it will list every account number, every address, whether it was a form letter or a custom letter, the date it was turned in, and the APN number for the 1,354 verified responses we received. We have about, and there's a lot of discussion about you guys want the coordinators of the protest, the forum protesters, to have a look at the the forms that we've rejected, and we will make those available. Let's just get through the board meeting tomorrow night, and we'll make those available next week for people to come in and take a look at what those are. Because Ms. Bianchi requested that we not produce names associated with addresses, and it was a very good request because of the number of law enforcement and public officials that live in the district who don't really, wouldn't care to have their name published on a public document, which all those protest forms and letters are public documents. So we've worked with the attorney, and the compromise is we're going to make the letter, the list available. And if somebody wants to come in and look at the rejected letters, just because of the intensity of the whole thing, we're gonna allow you to come in and take a look at it. We're not going to let you take pictures of them, but we'll let you look at them. And then if you do want to specifically get an actual copy of a letter, we're going to create a form that allows you to go to the address of the person and have them waive or have them allow you to look at their letter. Because basically, it was a great comment, Stephanie. I thought it was very, very well made, but I don't think we needed to be giving out the addresses for everybody here by name, because again, there's a lot of correctional officers in the district, a lot of police officers, sheriffs, firemen, public official, and people who just want to stick to their privacy. And I'm not really sure if everybody understood when they were signing those forms that they were public documents. So thank you for your comments, and we will post that spreadsheet after this meeting. So anybody who wants to see if their letter was counted, they can go in and they're sorted by address, name, and address number. So you can find your street name and your address number, and it's right there. And hopefully it makes sense. If it doesn't, then we'll take another crack at it after we hear comments. Does that help?
Anything, Amelia, questions, comments?
Yes, I currently have three hands raised, and I'll take them in the order that I believe they were raised. I was taking notes. So Nicole Williams.
Thanks, Amelia. So I'm having a hard time understanding how we can hold a vote on a process tomorrow before rejected letters have been validated. As I understood from my question asked to you, Tom, and to President Mabee, we would have an opportunity to review those for correction. Those were your words, not mine. How can we have an opportunity to review them for correction if the vote's already taken place before that's happening?
Nicole, hi. Thanks for your question, because I've seen that come back and forth, but we've been tied up with all this stuff. We told you could review the rejected letters. They're not eligible to be corrected. So the letters, you can take a look at them. You can see what, in almost every case, it's the person who signed the letter is not actually listed as an owner or a renter for the property. And so therefore they weren't eligible to be submitting forms. And some of the rejected letters are actually for addresses outside of the district, which is kind of odd, but people probably, you know, thought maybe they live within the district when they don't.
So my understanding is that that's different from what the attorney who was sitting next to you at the last meeting said. And I listened to the recording earlier today because I don't want to be misspeaking with what I'm stating now, but there was discussion about if we disagreed with letters that were rejected, we would have an opportunity to have that discussion. So not to be redundant, I'm not trying to be argumentative. I just am trying to make sure I'm understanding here. If we're going to be given an opportunity to express if we disagree with rejected letters, how can we do that after a vote has happened?
Well, let me be very clear, because I know you want me to be. The attorney made it clear well before that meeting that letters that were rejected were eligible for review after the deadline. And when we had that discussion on June 1st, I believe it was, that's what we said. You could review the letters after the deadline had passed. We didn't say you could correct them or resubmit them, because that's against the rules. So this is the route we're taking, and you're welcome to come in. We'll sit with you. You can go through the letters and see which ones were rejected and why. And, you know, in some cases we might even, I don't know, I don't think we'll open up our database to show you any information right now. But so your alternative is, I mean, Crystal, you're an attorney. You probably studied this. There's a remedy for Prop 218, and I believe there's a certain period of time that you guys have that you could maybe protest what happened. But as it sits today, this is the official count, and this is what we're taking to the board, and we're publishing the list after this meeting. So you can have everyone check and see if their address was counted. Does that answer your question, Nicole?
It doesn't, but I don't want to belabor everyone's time. I will send you the snippet of the recording so that you can hear directly what the attorney said, because it's not quite in line with what you're telling me right now. But like I said, I don't want to belabor everyone's time.
Okay, Nicole, it's John. I just want to make, and you know, at the actual meeting, we will have counsel present. So if you want to reintroduce that question, can get it formally answered tomorrow evening.
It already was. That's my concern. So I'll send that over, and I'll happily include you on it, John.
Okay, and I want to say something else, because I don't know if Paul mentioned it or not, but this is the first reading of the budget, and the second reading of the budget is going to take place June. Is it 29th that we're scheduling it for, Amelia?
June 29th at 5 p.m. So what you say, Tom, is tomorrow night is the first reading of the budget, not right now.
Right. Tomorrow night's the first reading of the budget. And then the second reading is going to take place June 29th at 5 p.m. And that's the process we go through.
Very good. I do have another comment, if you're ready for another comment, John.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Laura G.
Hi there. Thank you. I apologize for the second question. It looks like the protest group was about 26 letters short. I'm not trying to be contrary. I just am wondering if all the letters are going to be date stamped so that everybody can see how many letters came in just past that June 1st deadline that were verified and viable to count toward the election, or the, not the election, the protest. Second question, apologies. You said that the address list will be posted after this meeting. Will there be a community-wide communication that goes out so everybody is aware that this will be posted? There's just a handful of people on this Zoom meeting today, and I'm just wondering how that might be published.
Amelia, we can post information on Facebook, right? Do we have a TikTok account, Amelia?
We don't have a TikTok.
But we have Facebook. We have our webpage.
That's what we have, and of course we have the newsletter, which is going to come out in a couple weeks.
Right. So we'll put it on our webpage, and that's what we can do. And the answer to your first question is we didn't accept any letters after the deadline.
Yeah, I was going to make that clear, and you could again.
Apologize, you cut out. I did not hear that.
Oh, this is John. Let me, you could also address this formally tomorrow evening if you wanted to, but it's my understanding under the 218 rules that we can't, nor would we, accept a letter that was received after the deadline. The other question you might ask, I mean, if there had been 800 more letters that were verified, and I made that number up, I mean, we are doing, as a result of the protest itself, we are bringing you back a considerably reduced budget, which is really the purpose of the 218 exercise. So I'm not sure. And perhaps this is my layman's interpretation of 218, what the difference would be whether the letters had been less or more.
I really appreciate that answer, Tom. I just feel what I'm hearing, just for transparency, if people could see the date stamps on the letters, and give them a little bit of peace of mind that, you know what, my letter came in on June 3rd, for example, I saw the date stamp, and you know what, that's a bummer, I should have been on the ball. That's all about the date stamp, just to know how many came in. after the fact, but the compromises, they don't go unnoticed. I see that there is some compromise here, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. What do you got, Amelia? Anything?
Change to public.
I'm sorry, say that again.
James Q. Public.
Oh, okay. Comment. Okay, go ahead.
Hello, I want to follow up on one of the questions that was just asked. You didn't quite answer the question. Were there indeed any letters that were received after the deadline?
So I do know, I'll go ask the people at the front counter if we received actually any letters in the mail after June 1st. But I do know that somebody showed up with a handful of letters a day or two later, and we told them we weren't accepting any more letters, and they walked away with them. So I don't know how many they had.
Yeah, there was two ladies that came in. They had form letters. It was a fairly thick stack, but it was last week, I believe, Wednesday, and they asked if they could drop them off, and we did not accept them, so they did take them with them.
Okay. The original question I wanted to ask is, my understanding is that those rejected letters are public records. And could you explain your reasoning for not letting us copy those?
Well, once you've identified, Richard, a name that is consistent with a particular address, you've done what Stephanie had pointed out, which makes sense. That now you've created a trail to somebody's front door.
And how are those different from the validated letters?
Well, that's my point. They're not. So to reveal.
So you.
So let me finish, please, Richard. Then essentially, in either condition, you're doing the same thing. You're tying a specific name to a specific address, which is what we're trying to avoid. I mean, they are public documents. I mean, you know, but we're you know, it's somewhat unique, you know, to, it's kind of like Staten Island, where I come from, where we have a high concentration of law enforcement and fire officials and correctional people all tied into the same community. So, you know, where you might not have that concern in various other CSDs, we recognize that it's a concern in ours.
I mean, I think the issue is that you're releasing the validated letters, but not releasing the rejected letters. And I don't see the difference, that they've all had the same issue that you're talking about.
We're not releasing the rejected letter. We're going to sit with somebody, like if one of the people here on the Zoom call wants to take a look at them, they'll sit. We'll allow them to sit in a room. We'll have an employee sitting with them at the time so we can observe. And we won't allow any photographs to be taken, but we'll let them come in and take a look, because that's what we offered. But honestly, you know, I come from working in police and sheriff's departments, and a lot of my friends are police and sheriff, and they didn't want their address associated with their name either. And Ms. Bianchi, that was a good call. Now, if you have a specific address that you want to make sure their letter was received, then it'll be on the list. And that's what we can do. And we have the ability to make the judgment that we're not going to release the list of names and addresses because of the privacy and the security issue of our law enforcement family. And then I also, Richard, your first question, no, we have not received any letters in the mail since June 1st. I just went up and asked the ladies at the front.
Okay, I don't think you're addressing the question I'm asking. You're releasing all of the validated letters, you're providing the PDF file, putting them on the website.
We're releasing a spreadsheet with all the addresses, the date we received the letter, it has the APN number, it lists whether it was a form letter or a custom letter, and I think that's it. And the count, there's a number up to 1,355.
You're not posting a PDF file containing all of the letters? I mean, that's what you said you were doing before.
And that is correct, Richard. And then we received an email from Ms. Bianchi asking us not to list the names because of the high number of residents who would prefer not to have their name and their address on the internet for people to look at. And we ran that by the attorney, and we have the ability with a little bit of discretion to make that decision, which is what we've done.
Can you, how under the Public Record Act, what exception is that?
I would have to ask our attorney, and he'll be at the meeting tomorrow night. So that's a good question to ask while Dick Shanahan's in the room.
Okay. Okay, I guess that's it then.
What do you, anything, Amelia? Any other questions out there at the moment?
Oh, I don't have any other hands.
So beyond this, Paula, do you have more to this you want to talk about, or is this where Marty and I have to make a recommendation to the board as a whole?
Yes, this is where you would make your recommendation.
Marty, do you have any comments or questions at this point?
No, I don't see any reason why the board shouldn't take action on this.
And I concur with that. You know, it's the idea here is to not start cutting into unrestricted reserves to cover the shortfalls, and you know, we can't be completely certain what those are going to be, but based on what I'm looking at here and based on what we've been through and in the protest process, I think this is, and you know, we could sit here and have a debate line item by line item where these cuts should be, but we're not gonna do that. So based on the bottom line that Paul has presented today, I would concur with that. I would vote to recommend that the board take action on this budget. Do we have anything further, Amelia?
No, director comments would be the next thing. I don't have any more hands raised.
I don't have any at this moment. Marty?
Nothing further.
Any of the staff?
I have something to say, and this is important to me. First of all, we have some very high quality staff members who spend a lot of time working to address these letters, to count them and recount them and make sure that beyond any doubt that we have all the verified letters in the count of 1355.
1354.
All right, 1354. And they realize how important the work they're doing is to the district and the residents of the district. I would implore that if anybody wants to call the district and complain, to raise their voice, to use profanity, that they come by and they can get in my office and they can have that conversation. But I would implore that when you're calling the front desk, the counter, talking about your bill, talking about this or that, that you treat our staff with respect and that you don't raise your voice and yell at them, and you certainly don't cuss at them. I'm just torn by what I'm hearing is going on over the phone. So if somebody wants to come to the front counter and have an argument, I ask staff to step aside and they can have the argument with me. But that's where it stops. And I just, in your conversations with your constituents or your fellow residents, would you please, please ask them to treat our staff with the same respect that you wanted to be treated by yourself. So thank you very much for all the hard work they've done. They do not deserve what they're getting on the phone right now.
I have one, this is John, and I have one comment to add to that. that I've done a lot of analysis in the past 45 or 50 years over employee contribution. And comparatively, when you work inside an industry or in a specific business, one of the things you can do is you can take a budget or in non-public situations, you can take sales as a number to do the same thing. And you divide that by the total number of employees. So if you take the CSD staff and you divide it into 8.5 million, or if you do it particularly the way I've done it of late to see the disparities, is take it as a public utility and divide it by the number of employees to take the security issue out of it. You'll find out exactly from an employee standpoint, one by one, how efficiently the district operates. And I've tried desperately on a number of occasions to point out the unique things that we are required to do living 8.5 miles outside of the urban services boundary without any county support. And I talk about county support being regional sand for stormwater and sewer and SAC water for water support inside the county. And if you want to add in the sheriff's department, okay, for Sac County or Rancho Cordova or Folsom or Elk Grove or Citrus Heights, you can do that as well. So that would give you a little bit of perspective as to, you know, what some of the problems are here. And like I said, you know, I think that this is a pretty equitable compromise, and I'm hoping that we can move forward from this point. So I don't have any further questions. Paula, anybody in the staff, any more comments?
John, it's Amelia. I do have a hand raised. I don't know if you're accepting more public comment.
We'll take it.
Stephanie Bianchi.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking one further comment. I just wanted to comment on Mr. Hennig's comment about staff. I too do appreciate staff and the time that it took to filter through these letters that were presented. What my ask would be similar of board and staff. And I think what's important here is from a community member's perspective is it feels like, as a resident speaking for myself on multiple occasions, that the residents aren't being heard and, more important, listened to. And when the reflection coming back from board members and staff is argumentative and sarcastic and demeaning, I think if we all of us, monitor our tone and respect each other through this process, I think that there's a mutual respect that's given and that's heard. So I think as a takeaway, that would be my ask. You know, I try and represent myself in a certain manner in the way that I want to be treated. And in return, I would ask for the same. And I think that when I deal with the public on a daily basis and I treat people with respect, in turn, I expect to be treated similarly. So that would be my ask. I respect what you're saying, Mr. Hennig, and I agree with you. Nobody deserves to be yelled or cursed at. I think we all want to be heard and listened to.
All right. Anything else, Amelia?
No.
Okay. With that, we will adjourn. And thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye.